Should every day not be Earth Day? I think it probably should be. Well, Eamon Ryan would agree with me on that one. Now, on the line, we have Ray O'Neill, psychoanalyst. How are you doing, Ray?
Hello, Ray. How are you?
Good to talk to you. And Alison Keating, psychologist. How are you doing, Alison?
Hey, guys. How are you?
And Ray and Alison are available to you for advice on relationship problems. Okay, so we'll get straight to it then. This is a friend relationship problem. My oldest friend is being mean to me, and I can only assume it's because I've finally turned my life around. For years, I've been the dumpy, insecure one, but with the help of my dynamic new sister-in-law and a new diet and more exercise, I'm now in better mental and physical shape than ever. Sadly, my friend isn't thrilled. She once joked that she had to be the pretty one, in inverted commas. Why can't she be happy for me? Alison.
Okay, so this is one, you know, I think we've all experienced and seen play out. And, you know, the kind of very thinly veiled, you know, ha ha ha, I have to be the pretty one, isn't actually funny, or nor is it actually a joke. So this person needs to ask themselves the question, are they actually being a friend? And were they being a friend when the other person had to feel better by being the supposedly pretty one?
Mm.
You know?
Yeah. Is there a bit of jealousy here as well?
Oh, absolutely.
The dynamic 100%. New sister-in-law.
Well, no, but I mean, she's beginning to feel better in herself. I do think that sometimes when people, you know, feel more comfortable in themselves, your identity can actually shift.
Right.
And for other people, they can find that kind of disconcerting because they then feel less than. And, you know, it's like the dynamic in their friendship changes
shifts.
The other person feeling like she's somewhat threatened. But it's kind of, I find it interesting that they needed to be the pretty one, but it's not very pretty behaviour.
No,
you know?
No. Ray?
Yeah, it's not very pretty behaviour, as Alison says, and bless but misery likes company. And so I don't think this friend is not only not happy for you, but I don't think she's happy in herself. And I think, Ray, you're right. I think she's jealous about this dynamic new sister-in-law who's energised. There's a reason why, say, for example, when someone is a recovering alcoholic and they've moved on with their life, they have to move on with their social life and their personal life as well. Mm. And it's amazing how many people have been part of the process of holding you back.
Well, in fairness, I suppose, and I've read this from people who are recovered alcoholics, that they surrounded themselves with people who facilitated their drinking.
Mm-hmm. And it would be the same with drugs as well.
Yes, yeah. So they have to shed those people to be well, I suppose. So what's our advice to this person then, Alison?
Well, I just like stand back and as you see, sometimes when we lose kind of literally the weight, there can be other kind of emotional baggage that we kind of go, do you know what, has this person been a good friend to me even in the past? Do I come away from them after, you know, feeling energized and happy and kind of good, or do I feel drained, depleted and less than? So in terms of kind of the valuing where the relationship is at, I just think it's a good question to ask if you feel it's actually not doing you any good.
All right. And Ray?
And what I would say is, look, you've obviously taken great moves. Keep looking forward. Don't look back.
Okay.
The future's ahead of you.
Yeah. It sounds mostly positive there. Now, our next one, dear Ray and Alison, I'm very worried about my wife's weight. She is obese and we haven't made love in 2 years, but she refuses to diet. I keep warning her about heart disease and diabetes, but she bats me away. Cooking is her passion and that's fine, but how can I make her understand how worried I am about her long-term well-being? Ray.
Look, I think that's, again, a really hard one to approach, because how do you say that without the other person feeling judged or feeling criticised and potentially literally feeding their obsessions or passions in an unhealthy way? You just have to sit down with them and just say, look, we're together a long time and I want to be with you a long time. And here's my fear. And maybe it's just my fear. Maybe it's my stuff. But can we talk about it and see where that conversation might bring you? Mm. But you can't preach at somebody or you'll alienate them.
Alison?
Yeah, I agree. And I just... I really would always challenge kind of the idea you can't put someone else on a diet. Do you know that that's, you know, changing your kind of way that you eat is something that's going to have to actually come intrinsically. But I do think, like Ray's saying, you can sit down and lay out that this is kind of two pronged. One, it's that they're genuinely worried about their health, but two, they actually miss them. They miss the intimacy. And sometimes, you know, like this person, their passion is their food. I mean, perhaps the person and their cooking, you know, the husband might feel a little bit left out. But I've often found over the years that people, when that comfort eating is there, that they feel so bad in themselves that, as you said, any hint of criticism or judgment is going to be taken, you know, very, very personally. I just think we have to challenge the whole diet mentality anyway. And, you know, we don't really understand, going back to that sense of intuitive eating, that you actually, you know, you eat and then you stop when you're full, and you kind of, you genuinely understand that eating is such a psychologically complex experience. It's just not as easy as reducing the food down and going on the exercise. Like smoking is so much easier because you just stop, but you need to keep eating.
Yes.
So it's just to actually bring compassion to this. That's what I would actually say. That's how about going in with saying, look, I accept that this is the situation as it is. I am really worried about your health, you know, in terms of saying that I feel that there are concerns with diabetes or different things. And I also really miss you. So you're saying you accept them as you are, but you're worried about them and you want things to change. I think compassion is the key, to be quite honest. That's the way to actually change it.
It's a difficult chat to have.
It's a difficult one, but most chats are important.
Yes,
fair enough.
Okay, I really hope that works out. Now, this is sort of the opposite, really, in a way. I used to laugh and tease my boyfriend when he boasted about his good looks and great body. I'd put up with the hours he spent in the bathroom because I was proud to be seen with such a handsome man. But 3 years on, his vanity is really beginning to get me down. He's not joking when he says that he's gorgeous and that I'm lucky to have him. I find this self-obsession very immature and I'm starting to find it unattractive. How can I get him to change? Oh, Ray, how can I get him to change?
Again, if only people would change when we asked them to.
What would be more interesting? If only it was that easy.
World would be, and relationships would be more successful. I think the key thing is what this person says when they say that I'm starting to find it unattractive, because this is a person who's absolutely located in the body and in a vanity around his appearance. And it would be quite a shock to his ego and hopefully to his heart to actually kind of go, this isn't sexy. This isn't beautiful.
Hmm.
And for her to actually not, or him or her, I'm not sure, to actually say that and to hold that position, I'm starting to not fancy you. I don't desire you. There's not room in the bedroom for me because your ego is all over the place.
Yeah. It's not attractive, is it, Alison?
it's really not attractive, but it's not an easy one to get someone to actually see that, because they're so busy kind of in that gazing at their own reflection, that they and it's kind of sad because there can be a lack of intimacy then, because this person's kind of in love with themselves, do you know, but I mean that in a genuine way.
No, I know. I shouldn't laugh. I know.
He's kind of saying to her, you know, you're really lucky to be with a gorgeous guy like me, which actually that is really unattractive. Yeah. Like you're basically saying I'm better than you. And like the French one at the beginning, I don't think that's healthy. No. I don't think it's nice. And sometimes we have to bring it back to the basics of, do I actually like this person's character? Do you know, it's kind of a bit of a crass thing to say. You're really lucky to be with me.
it sounds like a deal breaker to me, you know. Like,
I think so too.
Yeah. Dre?
It is. The one thing I would just say in there is, behind all those ego performances, never forget someone like Donald Trump, there is an incredible insecurity.
Yes, a fragility, yes.
And I don't know if this... Yeah. That's why this is being so performed and being performed in this way. Now, if you can access that fragility, that's where true intimacy can happen. But otherwise, you know, you're only literally touching what he deems a very attractive surface, but it's still superficial.
Okay. Right. Thanks very much, Ray. Thanks, Alison. Mind yourselves.
Thanks a million.
Thank you.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.